Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading Bar podcast. Parker and Matt here, as always, and we are welcoming on a couple of special guests today. So first, Brian Keller is back joining us again. He's been on a couple times. You guys all know his voice. And another very special guest is Dr. Shelley Alexander, Brian's doctor. So,
yes,
Brian, yes. I know you recommended to us to have her on. You thought she'd be a fantastic guest. So if you want to kind of introduce her and tell us about why you wanted to have her on today.
Well, sure. First of all, thank you for Matt calling me a special guest. I'm a not so special guest since I've been on a few times, so I'm not so special.
You're still special.
I'm still special in my own way. Yes. So, what Dr. Alexander does in her practice, one of I think many things, she does hormonal replacement therapy, and I'm gonna let her dive into that in much greater detail. But that's. Why I go see her at her practice is because with my job and being up every day early, I needed to have some replacement therapy, hormonal therapy of my own to help get me through my day and things. So she has a really good practice with a lot of great information. And I think when you guys start diving into that with her today, you're going to really uncover some really great things that she has to offer potential clients. And we all, Matt and Parker, you guys and I know one of her clients that used to go to our other gym, and she goes to see Dr. Alexander, and she'd tell you, I'm sure, if you know, we were to ask her what she thought of what that does for her, she would be speaking in high regard. So, yeah, I think today's show will be a really good one.
Well, it's exciting. We're glad that you could join us, Doctor.
Thank you.
Ever done a podcast before?
I have not.
First one.
First yes. one. All right.
That's exciting. I know from... Just talking before the podcast, you're a wealth of information, so I know it's going to be really good for all of us to hear today. So thank you for joining us.
100%. And by the way, you referred to Parker as Matt.
No, I said Matt and Parker. Did I?
No, know? Before that.
Oh.
You said, after the introduction, you said, thank you, Matt, for giving me a special guest. And I wanted to say thank you because you're saying I look young.
No, I know you're the old man of the group. I know
that's
that. Right. Well, obviously, I know who you are. Sorry, Parker. Thank you for introducing our
Oh, you can do that anytime.
Yeah. All right. First things first, Matt told me we have to do Chiefs predictions today, even though I didn't really want to because they're sitting all their starters this week, playing the Broncos last week of the season, meaningless game, but nonetheless, they're still going to play. So we're going to do Chiefs predictions. And I'm going to start it off so Matt has a chance to, he can go against
That's right.
me if he wants
That's,
to.
Whatever you pick, I'm doing the opposite.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
I'm going to pick the Chiefs, even
big
against
surprise,
the Broncos.
Big surprise.
With some of their starters out, no Mahomes, no Kelce, no Chris Jones. I'm going to pick the Chiefs. They're going to have Carson Wentz playing quarterback. I think they're going to win 26-17, Chiefs.
Okay. Ooh. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think I'm with Parker because I think Carson Wentz is going to be a motivated quarterback. This is his first start in a full year. He only had one start last year, and he still thinks he can start in the league. He's going to come out fully motivated. Like Parker also said, just Mahomes, Kelce, and Jones are out. They're the full. We're going to get the full cast of everybody else. So I'd say I've been waffling around to see if we're going to hit our first score of 30 this year with Wentz or not. I don't think we're going to quite get there, but I'll say 27-23, Chiefs.
All right. Shelley?
Doctor, do you have a prediction?
No. I'm confirming. Okay. Chiefs. Go Chiefs.
All right, so this is my one opportunity to catch Parker. I've been trailing him all year. I'm one game behind. This is the last game, right?
Last of the regular season, but then we have playoffs.
Yeah, you can still do playoffs. So,
yeah, well... And who are they playing again?
The Denver Broncos.
The Donkeys.
Oh, in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Denver.
So, definite loss. They're going to lose, I'm going to say, 20-17.
Ooh.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here.
That's right.
Matt's predicting the loss.
This
we'll see what happens.
My
He's just trying to catch me. And he may do so. But if you do, then I'm not going against the Chiefs. I don't care what ever happens. They sit their starters. They could be playing backups. I don't care.
Well, the Broncos are motivated to get in. If they win, they're in the playoffs. If they lose, they're out. So
that is true. But the Chiefs could spoil their day.
Yes, they could. They could throw a wrench.
Nothing better than spoiling the Broncos' day.
Oh, I'd love that.
All right. So now we're going to move on to our Fit Focus segment. And Matt shared something very interesting with me today on the Fit Focus segment. Matt, do you want to?
Yeah. So back in March of 2024, the FDA hinted that they were going to look at food dyes. Okay. Now, we know in July of 2024, they banned bromated vegetable oil.
Yes. Okay. We talked about that on the podcast.
So I need to get rid of all seed oils, by the way. But anyway, but they now are looking, they hinted they're looking at these dyes. So, you know, a lot of people want to connect the dots and say, oh, because RFK got elected, now they're doing it. Well, looking at it and actually doing it are two different things, right? So RFK has been on a push, especially against red dye number five. I think it's red dye number five. But anyway, the red dye. And now the FDA, there's a push and some talk that the FDA is looking at banning all food dyes. Okay. Now, right now that's not substantiated, but there's discussion. And I was trying to find the source of this. I was researching them. All I'm finding is people reporting, but not telling me what the source is. And so now, again, the other side of the coin of this is a lot of media chatter that the food dyes have changed. They're changing the names on the labels, right? And so, and like to circumvent this fear, right? So as we know, a lot of our food dyes are made from petroleum, and they're very cancer agents or inflammatories. They mess up your endocrine system, and they're just bad all the way around. So I thought we could discuss just briefly what the new food dye color names are going to be. So
that's very interesting. It reminds me a little bit of MSG. You know, when everything, all the research came out about how bad MSG was, same thing started to happen. You all of a sudden started having different names that it would be called on ingredient labels, so people couldn't figure out that it was in there.
Right.
Sounds like it could be the same type of thing where they're going to, you know, demonize these food dyes, but then they're just going to hide them under different names.
Yeah. That's all they do to maintain, because they don't want to get rid of them anyway, because they know what it's doing for them. They just want to hide the name so they can continue to use them.
Exactly.
And continue to poison everybody.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and as we've discussed in this podcast for the last year, it's all about the money.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So as people stay sick, it feeds the medical community, and then they put them on these petroleum jugs, which causes has symptoms, and it's just this merry-go-round, right? So now, you know, if this, the whole idea is, if we were to eat healthy, you wouldn't be on these petroleum drugs. If you didn't have these, I mean, me and Parker have talked about many times how finding good food is like a, you know, a chess game, right? And, you know, I don't even go to Hy-Vee or Price Chopper anymore just because of these issues. But the point is, you know, these food dyes are something that have been poisonous for a very long time, and we have to get them out. So,
yeah. Dr. Alexander, what is your opinion on food dyes?
Well, I feel like we already have so many obstacles just to find healthy food. Why would we need to falsify? And even like glutamate, that's actually something that is real in the body.
Right.
These food dyes are not, we were never petroleum based. That it's just absolutely, like you said, inflammatory, carcinogenic. Yeah. So we already have, I mean, now they're finding plastics in all sorts of vegetables, and we already deal with so many just in our nature obstacles to health.
So,
why do we need to have
falsifying color? I mean, does this play, I'm kind of jumping the gun here. We'll go back to this topic, but I was curious, do you think about these petroleum products in your own business, and how to, do you have to consider them, you know, when you're talking to your clients?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we already deal with off-gassing of everything around us. You buy a new car, oh, you feel so great. That new car smell, toxic, yeah. off-gassing, petroleum-based, vinyl. I mean, before you name it, we already deal with so many things. We don't need it in our food.
Right.
As should be our medicine.
Which food and if I'm not mistaken, even like perfumes and, you know.
Candles.
And, you know, I mean, colognes. I guess there's, you know, agents in there that aren't great for the skin. Phthalates, I think that's the right word. You know, they're endocrine inhibitors or disruptors.
Matt, to the depth of what they are doing to poison us, most people that aren't paying attention, it would floor them. It would almost kill them because of I mean, it's everywhere. You probably couldn't name one thing that you do daily or maybe one that might not have any of that included, but they are poisoning us at every turn. No matter where what you're doing, no matter how you go about it, you're getting poisoned in some way.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to go throughout the day without getting poisoned.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, it's, again, you know, the cancer level that we have today, look back 100, 110 years ago,
wasn't
there. So just, I wanted to see, do you know the blue number one? Take a guess what they've got that name now.
Oh, yeah. I have the.
Do you have the list?
These are pretty funny.
Okay.
He's the cheat.
I won't guess, but.
Anyway, so blue number one. I mean, this is just for our listeners. Blue number one is going to be renamed Brilliant Blue. Blue number two is Indigo Line. Very fancy. Green number three, Fast Green. Red number three, Earthrozyne. Red number 40 is Allure Red. Yellow number five is Tartrazine. And yellow number six is Sunset Yellow.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so, like Sunset Yellow, Brilliant Blue, Fast Green.
Yeah, like,
all
woo,
these.
Yeah.
Oh, it has Sunset Yellow in it. I want some of that.
Oh, I want double that. Yeah, give me some of that.
Yeah.
And here's the thing is like some of our supplements have these food dyes in them.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. A lot of them do.
You know, if you go down to the supplement superstore, you know, not only does it have some of the artificial sweeteners in it, but it also has these dyes in it.
And seed oils and everything else. Yeah.
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 So, you know, this is, again, this is, you know, we bring this up only because our listeners need to stay informed, you know, that. This is the constant battle we face day in and day out of America having the crappiest food on the planet. And, you know, we have to try to stay ahead of the game. That's why every once in a while we bring in Brian to bring on the new proteins out there, supplements that are clean or not clean.
Oh, and I did. I brought one of my bars from before, one of my bars to eat this morning. So.
Does that have Sunset Yellow?
No, this one shouldn't have any dyes in it. No, it does look like it, but the packaging does not either. But no dyes in this. I made sure that I tried to get them as clean as I could, Doctor, before I started eating them. And then I started bringing them in to share with Parker and Matt. So I try to offer my small service to the podcast by bringing in good things for them to try.
One more thing I will add on the food dyes is,
yeah,
in this country, and really in any country, but especially here, we can't trust the government is telling us the truth.
Correct.
We can't, if they say Sunset Yellow is good for you, we can't just trust that, right? We have to do our own research, go with our own experiences, find trusted people in our lives that can guide us on this topic. And that's why we're here doing what we're doing, because it's a process. It's not an overnight thing. You don't just get all this research and immediately understand all these ways that we're being poisoned. You wake up to it one step at a time. I think we all probably could say that's how we woke up to it, one step at a time. We found one thing, we found another. Next thing you know, we're down here and we understand a lot of it. We still don't understand all of it, but we're trying to learn every day and get even better on that.
Because it is feeding the system, like we talked about. Big chemical creates big pharma, big chemical, and it ends up a cycle. Even on these dyes, like at least some of them, they're actually saying it's a color to give you an idea. Some of these tartrazine, people would think that's a natural enzyme.
Nobody's going to think about it.
Like, that's very dubious.
That's very misleading. I think that's why, obviously, that's why.
Well, we talk about it a lot, the term natural flavors, how misleading that is. Natural flavors, nothing natural about natural flavors.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's, yeah, that's what's bad.
I think just to finish out this topic, too, is then it's the importance of binding the toxins in the body and then draining them out. Have you heard of binding and draining?
Well, I don't know much about it, so I want to know more about it.
Us, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we all do need to take measures because regardless whether we're breathing it, it's coming through our skin, we're eating it, we're going to be inundated with toxins. So if we could bind the toxins and then you use a drainer to guide them out of the body. So binding would be things like activated charcoal.
Yeah.
And that's a great binder. The thing about activated charcoal, it's very large, so it will actually only bind what's in the digestive system.
Okay.
But if you use an activated carbon, because we're carbon-based, it'll actually be drawn into the body and systemically help us bind. And when it comes to, like, charcoal, you have to take it by itself. You can't take it with other medications or supplements. It'll bind everything. With the carbon-based, it'll actually, since it attracts, it'll actually deliver things better to the body so you can take it with other things and you don't have to offset it by an hour on each
side.
So
what does that look like? So let's say you wanted to take activated carbon. What does that entail? Is that like you need to go through a special doctor to do it, or is this something that you can do DIY?
DIY. You can obtain really high quality carbon based binders that it's a supplement formula, right? A capsule that you would take. And especially if somebody is interested in weight loss, if they're actively losing weight, we store our toxins in our fat. And if we don't have fat, then they're in our organs. So especially while you're losing weight and or if you're going through a cleanse, it's really important to do your binding properties.
How often should someone do this?
Well, I would recommend everybody binds at least once at night. Take an activated binder before you go to bed, where you're getting ready to go through your detoxification process while you're sleeping. Take one right before bed. Take your drainer right before bed to support yourself.
So is this something you talk about with your clients, or is this something that's...
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Absolutely.
And then what are some of the responses that you get from your clients when they start doing this?
Mostly people would... It's symptoms that they may not have even realized they had. Brain fog, for example. Lower energy, some of these things. Better sleep.
Yeah.
Because if you're not able to fully detox while you're sleeping,
right,
you're also going to have some mitochondrial disturbances. You're not going to have great sleep.
Right.
And so oftentimes you'll what I call consider like glitching in the night, and it'll cause you to wake up. And so if you can smoothly go through that, then you'll have better quality sleep. All things are better.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And this is something everybody needs.
Because
like
needs.
We talked about, from every
Americans,
angle.
At least all Americans. Yeah.
From every angle, we're getting hit with these poisons and toxins. There's no way to avoid them. We have to go through some sort of detoxifying process.
Well, we're getting hit so much harder than other countries for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, that was a good discussion on the food dyes here. So... Now we want to get into our main reason why we're here today, which is to talk to Dr. Alexander. So first, Dr. Alexander, I want to give you an opportunity to just kind of introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your background, you know, your education, your upbringing, kind of what got you to the point where you're at today with how you think about medicine and health.
So I'm from Dodge City, Kansas.
Ooh, I like Dodge City. I have family there. Yeah.
Well, I got the heck out. Go me.
Dusty. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I spent most of my childhood living with my grandparents on the farm as often as I could. And my mem, my grandmother, was my mentor in all things of life. And when I really look back, a lot of my holistic beliefs were directly derived from her and the way of being on the farm and nature caring for itself. And when I was a little girl, my mem, her sister was a nurse, and she was very proud of that, of her. So I was rendering, like supporting my uncle, helping him to heal. And she said, "Oh, you're going to be the, you're going to be the nurse on the farm."
Right.
And I just knew, and I said, "I'm going to be the doctor."
Yeah.
And I didn't, I mean, I was the first to graduate on both sides of my family. It wasn't like I knew a doctor. I just, I've just always known that this is my calling. So then high school, pre-med. So always known. And then my college counselor said to me, she said to me one day, she's like, "Shelly, you're not, you know, you're not an MD. You're not." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? This has been my whole life." She said, "No, you're an osteopathic physician." And I had no clue to what that meant. And indeed she was right. So I went that route to be more holistic. So I'm an osteopathic physician, med school. And then, I'm intrigued with the mind. And so that led me to internal medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, following internal medicine, also maybe to go back to my MMM, I fell in love with geriatric population. So I'm a geriatrician as well. So definitely started off, I opened up a geriatric assessment clinic at Truman Medical Center.
Okay.
And yet to come to find out, that's not a large geriatric population. I was also doing their internal medicine, and then ended up in nursing home and hospice care. And I love hospice care, very passionate about that. And then I would get what I would call the cosmic 2x4s. And I got 3 of them. And when I got hit, boom, boom, boom. So just real briefly and quickly, my dad was murdered by modern medicine. So a very slow and cruel death. So that, and then my own health situation came into play. And then the third thing hit, and I'm like, uh-uh. So I was on Dr. Google one night, and I was like, because there was a symptom that a patient I couldn't remedy with convention. Mm-hmm. And I stumbled upon this American Academy of Anti-Aging.
Mm.
And I lost it. I tried to call, I tried to sign up, and it was, you know, more pricing than what I could put on my credit card.
Right.
So I call up the husband, and I'm like, "Am I blah, 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 blah?" And he's like, "I thought anything over $500 we were going to discuss." And then he assured me that they would take my money the next day, that we could get it figured out. So then that led me to becoming certified in American, through the American Academy of Anti-Aging, functional medicine, very similar. So I am integrative. I integrate my background of internal medicine and geriatrics with functional medicine.
Right. So your practice right now, functional medicine and anti-aging?
And integrative.
Integrative, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I still have the internist at heart as well. Certainly, I mean, I do prescribe. There are a list of anti-aging medications, metformin being number one for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I do prescribe prescription medications as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you also work with supplements that you've prescribed as well with your clients?
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
So if we get into the 4 R's of gut health, but you can use the first 3 R's for anything. You have to remove what's hurting you, replace what's missing, and repair. And often the way to replace what's missing is through nutraceuticals, natural replacement, bioidentical, whether it be, of course, hormones we kind of mentioned prior to coming on, or the nutrient that you may be missing.
And BHRT, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, that's the acronym that...
Yes.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right.
So talk us through that process a little bit. If somebody, or I want to know for myself too, but I'm sure our listeners want to know, repairing the gut, you mentioned the 3 R's. What would be the actual practical steps someone could take to go through those 3 R's to repair their gut?
Okay, so when it comes to the gut, you actually have 4 R's.
Okay.
Mm. Okay. So what I like to do in my practice and with everybody is take them first through the 4 R's at a more surface level, but easy hanging fruit that you can pluck down, right? And lifestyle changes that everybody can do to allow the natural processes in the body to start healing themselves. And then often then we'll come back and look at it at a deeper level, doing stool testing and things like this, right? Just keep taking it in layers. So the first R, remove what's hurting. So as a species, we have been designed, created to be hunting and gathering.
Mm-hmm.
We were never designed to be cattle grazing, right? So the first R to remove what's hurting you is intermittent fast. Right. And I know
I'm a big fasting fan. So
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We both are. Yeah.
Well, that makes me too. Yeah.
I've turned you on to that
makes
recently.
Me too.
Yeah.
Well, and it's because again, that's how we were designed. So there's this hormone that is released by the stomach when you stretch your stomach called ghrelin. That tells the brain I've eaten, I'm full. We can start burning fat. On the flip side of that is a hormone called leptin that is in the fat cells as in a whole organ speaking. So you got ghrelin and you got leptin. And so as somebody that is cattle grazing and eating all these small meals, unfortunately what happens is they don't stretch the stomach and release ghrelin. So what will happen is they'll get elevation of leptin that says, I haven't eaten, I'm hungry, I need to store fat. I don't know when I'm gonna eat again, right? So that really gets off. And it's important too, even though for people that are fasting, and my recommendation is the 16-hour fast. And it doesn't have to be every single day. I like for patients, like anything that you can do that you're trying to reach your goal line, if you can at least 70% of the time meet yourself there. So Monday through Friday, you intermittent fast. If you want to have brunch on the weekend, you have brunch on the weekend, whatever type thing. You go on vacation, you go on vacation. But as a rule of thumb, you try to at least intermittent fast Monday through Friday type of an idea.
Is that like the way, like continuously Monday through Friday or just a period of time?
So my recommendation is that you have your 8-hour window for feeding.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially you eat lunch and dinner. However, there's amazing things that mimic fasting that I do for breakfast that I recommend everyone should do. So the purpose of the intermittent fast is we have these, as far as gut health is concerned, right? So, of course, so we have these, it's called migrating motor complexes, which within the intestine. You should have a sterile stomach. You should have a sterile small intestine, which none of us really do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it should open up into the colon, into the microbiome, the billions of organisms, right? So we have these migrating motor complexes that can grab the organisms that are up in the small intestine and pull them down into the colon. But they cannot do that if there's debris in the small intestine. So they cannot. So as far as, of course, insulin receptor resetting, right? Reboot, right? Resensitize the intermittent fasting, right? Support ketogenesis. I mean, allow the pancreas to rest and heal. So numerous benefits, of course. And to balance that, though, we must focus on feasting as well. So, and when I first started recommending the intermittent fasting, it was a couple ladies and I wasn't seeing their benefits as great. And and it took a lady, I was like, well, what are you eating? And she's like, well, I'm eating one of these little. I'm like, oh, your body doesn't know it's not still fasting. Like you have to feast.
Mm-hmm.
You really sit down at dinner. I know this is a lot of myth busting. Right? Mm-hmm. We're not paupers at dinner. You really want to feast at dinner to say, release that ghrelin. So half of your plate at least is fibrous veggies, right? To stretch the stomach, to release that ghrelin. I've eaten, I'm full, burn fat. Okay, so the first R, remove what's hurting. Intermittent fast. Allow the body to naturally clean itself out. Replace what's missing. Almost all of us have a deficiency of stomach acid. And why is that? Because when we are stressed, we go into fight or flight. And if you're digesting the meal, you would be the meal, right? So all the blood flow is clamped down to digestion. Well, the weakest of that is your juices, and especially stomach acid. And then you'll hear people say, oh, well, I got put on a stomach acid blocker because, well, unfortunately, you had too much, you had already a deficiency of, it's called hypochloridia. You already had a deficiency of stomach acid. The food has to liquefy, therefore completely liquefy, ideally, so that you're killing all the bugs that are coming in. We have parasites, bacteria, fungus, right? They come in. And if we don't have a vulture stomach, which to date, the vulture has never once been found to be infected with anything because it has the purest stomach content on the planet.
Yeah, and then eat the highest worst acidity. Stuff. They eat the most
right?
Oh, interesting.
So it is your number one defense mechanism for your health, for your gut health, is stomach acid. And it, and it, you at least have to liquefy the food enough to get through the pylorus, right? So if it's, if you don't have enough stomach acid, it's going to sit there and churn, and then you go to bed, and now you're regurgitating, right? So what shall we do to replace stomach acid? That's where the apple cider vinegars come in. Anything to help support creating improved acidity, because also then the better stomach acid, the more your pancreas will release buffers to then alkalinize you. So I recommend patients, I love for patients to get up in the morning and the first thing that they ideally do is warm sea salt water.
Yeah.
And start small. And
yeah, we both do that in the morning. Yeah. Wow.
And then if you could add a little lemon into it, that's even better, okay. Right? So remove what's hurting, intermittent fast. Replace what's missing, apple cider vinegar. When is the best time? Well, it depends on you. If somebody's getting like a lull in the day around 2 or 3 o'clock, go do it then. You get cramps in your legs at night, take it at bedtime. Ideally, at least, even my recommendation is either in the afternoon or maybe after dinner, because it'll also help you, it'll help trick the brain that you're getting something sweet, and it'll help some people not want to have the munchies after dinner as well. So remove what's hurting, replace what's missing, and then go into repair. My recommendation for repair is what I do for breakfast, which is, I still refer to it as bulletproof coffee because of Dave Asprey creating bulletproof products for us, but power coffee. And so you must have your collagen in it and grass-fed butter.
And I have a friend who puts grass-fed butter in his coffee. Yeah.
Well, so I drink bulletproof too. So the way you said to get around your fasting, because I fast for 17 hours a day, Monday through Friday. I'll go, my window of eating is from noon to 7 p.m. So when I get up in the morning, I've already hit the gym early. When I get home, I'm trying to keep my stomach, my mind off my stomach gurgling because it I've already worked out. So it's saying, feed me. So I could do a power coffee as part of my fast with the ghee in the coffee, because I usually put a scoop of protein powder in, and I know that's a no-go for fasting. So I would have to not have the protein in my coffee, I'm guessing. Correct?
My recommendation is that you would do your coffee before your workout.
Okay. That's I'm already up at 4:15 getting my coffee together before I do that. That's I could try, but okay.
Come on. Just with your caffeine ahead of time. Just caffeine may support the workout a little bit better. Yeah. But the great thing about if you keep it, and yes, it's all personalized to each person, it could mildly cause you to come out of a true intermittent fast, but not for the overall purpose of why you're fasting. If you just do simply keep collagen, keep it as your collagen-based protein source, and then your fat as your grass-fed butter, and then you could add MCT oil if
you want. I usually put the brain octane in mine.
And if you want that as well. That will mimic fasting. And why do we want to do this? So the main ingredient, the number one amino acid, if you will, of collagen is glycine. And so we were talking earlier about off-gassing and petroleums and these things. Glycine is necessary for the liver for phase two detoxification of these off-gases, of these petrochemicals. So the majority of us, like I'll have all my patients on collagen, and then maybe 3-6 months in, I'll do a nutritional evaluation, and they're all still extremely deficient in glycine. Just because so much off-gassing is happening and so much stuff's in our food.
Explain off-gassing.
So these chemical products that we're putting in our homes, for example, or our pretty car smells or things like this. But take vinyl, for example.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Right. Like the chemical fumes that come off of it. Okay. Glycine is needed in the liver to detoxify those for us.
glycine is one of the ones that I've given to some of my clients to help them rest better. And also, I think it's also in some anti-inflammatories.
Yeah, you're talking about having a little bit of, mm-hmm. like, a little more glycine right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you.
The second ingredient of your collagen is proline. So glycine and proline will come together to make our connective tissue.
Okay.
So, of course, a lot of ladies want the collagen for their not wrinkling situation. However, if we had enough glycine for detox, and then we have enough to make our connective tissue, if we then have enough, the number one most regenerative phospholipid is something called phosphatidylcholine. Cardiovascular, also, of course, neurologic health, right? All healthy cells, but specifically, since cardiovascular disease is our number one killer, but cardiovascular, and to prevent neurodegeneration, right? You have to regenerate faster than you're degenerating. So if you have enough glycine to do these other two things, ideally then you have glycine will make serine, makes phosphatidylserine, makes phosphatidylcholine.
Okay.
So if you get your collagen in your coffee every morning, you're already setting yourself up for, and now you've got protein, you're ketogenic, right? You got fuel though. That can be your, and it will, unless you really do a large amount. For most people, even 2-3, generally it's about 4 scoops that will true coming out of a true fast, if you're wanting a true fast. So,
well, I think I know how to start my workouts now in the morning. I think I'm going to rethink my process.
Yay. Okay, why the grass-fed butter or ghee? So your intestinal cells are obligatory fuel sourced to butyrate, butyric acid. It's the highest content in grass-fed butter or ghee. So you're literally just feeding your cells so that they can heal, repair, and create new cells, right? And if you put it in your hot liquid beverage, and it doesn't have to be coffee, people that don't love coffee will put it in tea. Some people will do cacao. Now you're really not probably going to be in a fasting state with that. But right, the whole point, though, for healing the gut, if you put that in the hot beverage, you'll just coat your intestines and heal them, and you'll just start healing all the way down, ideally.
Right. Okay, so there was a lot there, but I'm gonna come from this from a very selfish standpoint. So I used to do fasting. I used to do quite a bit of fasting, not for the value of it, what it does for the body, but I did it for religious reasons when I was in my 30s. About my mid 30s until now, because I'm hoping maybe you can give me a solution to this. Anytime I go without food for more than 3 to 4 hours, a migraine comes on, like severe. And I eat very clean. So as long as I'm eating, my migraine stays away, right? And I put very little, you know, of the preservatives or cancer agents in me. But as long as I'm eating, my migraines stay away. And I don't know why. I've had my brain scanned. I've had an MRI. Couldn't see anything. So I'm asking, what am I deficient in, or how can I resolve that so I could embrace the qualities of intermittent fasting?
To me, it's a mitochondrial situation.
Okay.
And so you would want to investigate your mitochondria and find out, is it a heavy metal? Is it a this? Is it a that? Is it a deficiency? But first and foremost, I would have you take magnesium.
Yeah, I take magnesium every night before I go to bed.
Okay.
Yeah, because that helps me sleep. You know, sometimes I've given my clients magnesium and inositol. Inositol, yep. And there's one more, but anyway.
GABA. Theanine.
Oh. Theanine, yeah, L-theanine.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'll give
you. I got your stack.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, when I have given that to them, they sleep so heavy they have trouble, so they like pull back the ingredients. Well, I can just do magnesium and I'm deep to sleep. And I notice when I don't take it, I don't sleep very deep, right? So so yes, I'm taking that. And so
and have you tried the warm sea salt water at that time? To
I haven't tried warm sea salt water. I mean, like, I put and you said sea salt. I sometimes put kosher salt instead of sea salt. Is there a difference?
Just a different mineral profile.
Yeah, okay.
It's great to mix it up.
Yeah, even. So the only reason I do kosher, it seems to dissolve very quickly. But I can try this salt at night. I mean, I'm looking for anything that'll help. I mean, not that our audience has my issues, but
would additional glycine not help for that as well in the brain as well as
quite potentially, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not taking that, so I could add.
And
that.
I'm not either. I'm gonna start adding that.
Yeah. Sorry to derail this.
No. Yeah. So we removed what's hurting. We replaced what's missing. We repair with the collagen and the grass fed butter, and then re-inoculate. You've got to get the good probiotics back in.
Yeah.
And how do you get those?
Good Greek yogurt?
No.
I was just saying that just to see.
Sorry.
That's good to know.
Until your gut is in full alignment, the most challenging for us to digest is dairy. Mm-hmm. So with the exception of the grass-fed butter, of course. So
would that include non-pasteurized?
Actually, no. Since if it's not pasteurized, it actually has its own natural enzymes in it.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, so once it's been pasteurized, and if we don't have our brush borders, so the inner lining of our intestines, even the smallest virus will slough it off. So if we don't have that, we have no real ability to break it down in the body, and then it sits and spoils and turns rancid. And
well, you're looking at two raw milk drinkers, and I need to start doing that as getting some too. Yeah. But yeah, so that would that be a way to help re-inoculate or no with the raw milk or what would you suggest for getting that started again if you're not if it's not dairy I guess.
Would use a diverse I would start off with a diverse formula of probiotics.
Okay.
Encapsulated. Yeah.
What is your client base. So what are some of the typical things when people are coming in that you are the most common thing you have to address?
Well, 100% of us are gut health as a foundation. I would say most, I now see everybody. I see husbands, wives, kids. I see family, right? Like I see a lot of families. I would say the biggest draw is hormones. Right. Most people come to me with question about their hormones and feeling as if that's the causation of a lot of their symptoms.
And why would they seek you? What is the common reason? Like, hey, you know, it's like, do they automatically, you finding more people are automatically associating, gosh, I'm sluggish, I'm tired. Why can't I get, you know, I'm always tired, right? And I'll kind of go from where I'm at. So, like, I keep my testosterone higher by just working out, okay? I know my testosterone's getting above 600 when I'm staying 5-6 days a week, and then if I miss a couple weeks, I know it's got to be in the 400s because I'm like, you know. But just working out, I keep my energy levels high, right? And then, but a lot of people, this would be my wife. My wife doesn't work out, and so I said, why don't you look into some hormone replacement therapy? And that's what she did, right? So what are some typical, I mean, do you suggest resistance training, number one, but or any type of activity with your hormone replacement treatments?
Well, absolutely. Okay. It's foundation.
Yeah. Oh, super. Okay.
Absolutely. And how to naturally raise your own and balance your own hormones of what you do have is sustenance.
Right.
Working out, being athletic. And especially, I mean, if we're speaking of men, the biggest risk to their testosterone outside of all of these xenoestrogens that we have, plastics and pesticides that we've kind of been referring to, but also is adipose.
Mm.
It aromatizes a testosterone and turns it into estrogen. So it's key for staying fit and healthy to keep your natural testosterone as its free state, as itself.
Yeah. For our listeners, can you specify adipose? What adipose is?
Oh, fat.
Do you think that's important?
Yeah, 100%.
Because a lot of people probably don't know that, but yeah. Having more body fat is what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, you have BH, you specialize in or work with BHRT, which is bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. So you also hear of just HRT, hormone replacement therapy. Mm. So what, I guess, is the difference? So how do you find something, I guess, or how do you manufacture something that's bioidentical versus standard, just regular? So if you're doing bioidentical, what does that look like versus just standard hormones? What type of hormones would be in a standard HRT versus a BHRT?
So
I guess, why is it beneficial to do the bioidentical versus just standard hormone replacement therapy? I guess I should have asked that.
So we learned back in 2002 with the Women's Health Initiative that came out that very large increased risk of cancers and blood clots with hormone replacement therapy. What were they giving? First of all, they were giving a pregnant mare urine estrogens, which equates to about 50% estrone, which is harmful estrogen. So not our beneficial estradiol, not estriol, but estrone that breaks down into cancerous estrogens. So 50% already bad stuff, and 50% completely foreign horse estrogens. Nothing, right, even remotely to us. Not only that, it was given in a pill form, which means your liver had to metabolize it. Anything that is esterified is very hard for the liver to break down and metabolize. So not only they were giving very foreign, and then the progesterone was not progesterone, it was a progestin synthetic also. And if even you look at the molecule, I mean, it's very obvious, even just looking at the molecule, why it may cause an increased risk for clotting, right? So not only it was the delivery system was bad, and you're giving just purely bad stuff to women, and there's still doctors out there doing it. You want something that is absolutely exact to what is made in the human body, bioidentical. It looks exactly identical to what we make. And it is made out of yams, or so it seems like, how can you get these estrogens at it? But they use some vector system and they're able to isolate and just that exact estrogen that looks identical. So same as these other, all of our other regenerative repair hormones, we want them to look identical to us, right? We don't want foreign.
So when you say identical, you're talking about the molecular structure of them?
Yes.
That looks identical to what we have?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely identical.
So how do you know if you're getting that? Because like my wife is, she went to her doctor and he prescribed her progesterone and estrogen. I think that's right. And is she getting horse stuff?
That's a good question. How is she taking the estrogen?
I think it's pill.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would highly advise to do something different.
Okay. Well, she started it like a couple months ago. So, bioidentical. So that would be something you would either ask your doctor or you'd have to go to someone who is a functional medicine.
Speaking of, there's a doctor.
Oh, I know, but I'm asking for our listeners.
And she's over closer to you guys, over in Leawood.
So. Right. I'm trying, doctor. I'm trying here.
Yeah. So, and why? Why would we want to replace? Again, replace what's missing, right? We spoke to that. I love, they call it the health span curve. So all of us in our first 20 years of life, we go through the development stage. So it's four stages, right, that we go through. So we all, unless there's some genetic situation, we all develop about the same. And then we hit our peak right around our 20s of our vitality portion of our life, right? And then we go into degeneration, and then we go into morbidity and then mortality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as an internist geriatrician, I was very able to support a patient in a nursing home bed to survive 20 plus years, right? Now, so there's lifespan, then there's health span, right? And America has the largest gap of life and health span.
I believe it.
So when you look at, and of course, again, we're inundated with all these chemicals and big pharma at every corner. How can we then recreate that vitality portion, which is by, if you look at it, it's the least disease. There's no chronic disease really at that stage. Now, of course, again, it's getting more Americanized, worse and worse, but you know, kids are unhealthy, more chronic disease than ever before, but that is our peak time. Well, why wouldn't we want to then recreate that? And there is a reason, because what was the key factor of having that portion of your life is your vitality. It's because that's when you have your most optimal hormones, because they're all regenerative in each different fashion. If you look at, so cardiovascular protective, regeneration of the brain, especially progesterone, so the whole body, tissue regeneration, all this, right? So talk about bones and muscles and whatnot. So why wouldn't you want to then recreate that vitality? And then I say just live Japanese style, right? Live in a health span, and then instead of spending 10 to 20 years in a dying phase,
right?
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Live your healthiest life, and then...
It's like falling off the cliff. You're just done.
Just,
yeah.
Yep.
What's an extra 10 or 20 years if you're in a bed all day and
that's
can't do anything?
Exactly,
you know,
right.
It's almost worse than just, like you said, just dropping off right then. But an extra 10 or 20 years
of quality,
of being healthy. I mean, think about all the stuff you can get done. You know, traveling, experiencing things, you know, enjoying your family. I mean, there's so many benefits you get from actually a healthy extra 10 or 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I ended up witnessing my great grandmother be bedridden for the last 5 to 10 years of her life, and it made her go senile. I wouldn't want to be bedridden. I mean, you're not allowing your body to move and to do things and to circulate. And it's slowly just killing you and making you go crazy, I think. I mean, obviously there's more genetics in it than that, but I just felt that bedridden for that amount of time, Parker, just made her just, yeah. So I agree. I like that Japanese style. You're here, yep. And then, hey, you're done. And then, yep. And then you go.
Now
I'm okay with that.
This was like 15 years ago. I went to so I'm old.
With that story, you are.
Yeah. 15 years ago, I went to my 30-year anniversary, high school anniversary, and I remember walking in there, and I was stunned. I was stunned how deconditioned. No, I'm sorry, I was 25. 25 years.
I was going to say, you added 5 years to your life there, Matt.
Part of what goes is the memory. But anyway, so at the 25-year anniversary, I was stunned. There was people there that looked like they were in their mid-60s and 70s, you know. And at that time, you know, I was probably just turned into my 40s. And I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. I'm just like, my gosh, it looked like they're close to death. And it's because, you know, and I get, me and Parker, we get the clients that the doctors come to, you know, us, or tell their patients to, listen, you need to do something now. Because they're deconditioned, they haven't done any physical activity for decades, and by the time some of them come to us, they're so deconditioned, it's like we'll never get them back to like where they're not rounded shoulders anymore, or they're hunched over, or you know, their spines are crooked now, or you know, there's something going on. And, you know, we'll improve their lives dramatically, only because we give them the strength to be able to go upstairs and not trip if they just stub their toe, and you know, give them functionality in life, which is what me and Parker believe in, is give them the practical application to actually function in life.
Absolutely.
And we give them that back, but we're always surprised how people let themselves decondition so much. So, you know, so that's from our aspect as personal trainers, you know, hearing what you're saying is like, you know, this gives us more wisdom to like hit it on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a question about the BHRT and your thoughts. You said mostly, you know, you started out dealing with geriatrics, older people. Do you still deal with a lot of older people? Do you have some younger people that come in maybe in their 20s or 30s?
Absolutely.
You know, what are you seeing with those people in terms of hormone replacement therapy? Because I know Matt is a big proponent of natural, you know, trying to keep his testosterone as naturally high as possible. A lot of men his age, though, struggle with that. And, you know, then comes the need for some of that HRT.
Mm-hmm.
But as a young person, it's supposed to kind of naturally be high. So,
and previously it was. Now,
yeah,
I would say, of all of the 20-some-year-old men that I have, and I have some a little younger than that, but of the 20-some-year-old men, all of them have low T. And they didn't come to me with that. It was, hey, I'm seeing their parent, and the parent's like, hey, I want you to just check out my kid. And again, it's because there's all of these synthetic estrogens in the world of plastics and pesticides and these things. And numerous other, but that I would say that the gut health, of course, contributing to that. But so your question is, yes, it's happening very young now. And there is ways to try to re-stimulate your own natural production. Absolutely. And of course, what is key? Specifically working out,
mm-hmm.
right? Absolutely. And then, there's different cold plunging is quite amazing to try to help support.
Oh, this is interesting because I've heard people that are in our industry that are very much for cold plunging and people that are very much against it.
You hear it both ways,
yeah.
right? And especially they say for females not to cold plunge because of their hormones, but it's actually, I think cold plunging is the one natural lifestyle that I have identified through blood work to have the most profound effect.
Wow.
On especially men.
That's profound.
So that's profound because, I mean, I've been hearing it both ways, you know, and I haven't, I mean, Parker, just like, we're not experts in that. So it's really fascinating to hear you say that.
I've seen men be able to raise their testosterone by at least 200 points.
Would that
with
be
cold
on a,
plunging?
Is that
well, and
is
we're
a
also
regular?
Doing gut health, and we're, oh, I mean, we're sure. doing these other things.
But I mean,
as well,
is that regularly or once every once a week, once
no,
a month?
You have to be consistent.
Okay.
Is it a daily?
Daily.
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 But you're gonna have to buy a cold plunge
lifestyle.
System.
I'll settle with my cold showers for now. But
yeah.
Maybe eventually, if I get some.
That's
some
just
space
cruel and unusual punishment.
I just don't like cold. The cold plunge. I have to mentally work up to that. But just
it
quickly, I do want to tell you, Matt. There is hope. So you had mentioned you work out, and with you at your age, you are a few years older than I am, but we're both in our 50s. And you ended up, you thought your testosterone when you work out is around 600 and it was good. Well, mine was around in the fives or low
no,
sixes.
It was 400.
Mine yeah. dipped, but it came yeah. back up. And when I was working out and as I was losing my weight and getting to where I wanted to be before I started seeing Dr. Alexander, but what I found was, whether it was my circadian rhythm, I don't know exactly if I'm in my perfect realm of where I'm my range, but I'm up at 415 working out, so I'm hitting it pretty hard first thing in the morning, then going about my business, and by the time I get to 2 or 3 in the afternoon, I was just trying to stay awake. I couldn't stay awake, and I had to focus because I had so much work going on. Business in my industry is busy, so I just wanted something to give me that little extra boost. And when I went and saw Christine, Dr. Alexander's nurse, I said, I was there with
medical
Megan.
Assistant. It's very
oh, medical,
important.
I'm sorry. Oh, no. Okay. Medical assistant. My apology. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Medical assistant. I don't want to disrespect.
Talk about the well, just governmental situation.
Yeah.
Well, so she was telling, I was talking to her when she was visiting with Megan about her stuff. And I said, well, I think I'm doing pretty good at 600. And she was like, oh, you feel pretty good with that? And I said, well, I mean, for the most part, but I get in the late in the afternoon, so, and I start nodding. So then whenever I got to see her, she finally, we started working on a deal and a regimen for me, and mine went up, and I can make it now through my afternoons without nodding off. I feel great. And you're not even going to want to know where my number was when I got it checked this last time. I don't know if I should share, but you want to know?
It was four digits.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Well, at some point I might have
but
to
me
that.
I don't think that would be something that's not natural. To me, I'm just helping my testosterone get to where I can at least function. I wasn't doing it to necessarily just blow myself out of the water in the gym. I did it with a focus for my day so I could get through my day.
Well, and here's the thing about
this
that.
This is just a benefit.
And Dr. Eth, I'm sure you can speak to this, but the levels, the recommended range of levels has been changing over the years. And it used to be the normal range was a lot higher than what it is now. So right now, 1,000 may be outside above the normal range, but it wasn't necessarily back when our testosterone levels were higher.
100%. So what's interesting is when we are unwell, all our, so testosterone drops, right? When you're unwell. Well, when you look at where did the blood work that you're comparing it come from? It came from sick people, hospitalized or volunteer, but most of this came from hospitalized patients. So your bell-shaped curve is of a sample of sick people. We don't want to compare ourselves with what is optimal versus what is sick care, right? Sick care levels. I love at minimum to try to get all of my male patients over 750, preferably over 1,000.
And that's even the ones that are in their 70s.
Absolutely.
And the older ones that are coming in to see her.
Absolutely.
That's all the ages. I mean, and what's the oldest patient, male patient you have?
Definitely upper 80s.
And their testosterone levels are still pretty good.
And I have a 90s, I mean, a female still on her hormones, 95 or something, 96, 97. Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in
we want to stay vital, right?
Correct. And I'm a firm believer of the BHRT for at least the test for men, because it just helps me. So my deal is twice a week. I just have to administer it twice a week. It keeps you level for the most part by doing it that way. And it just helps me function day in, day out.
Most physiologic that way. Yeah.
What do you think about that, Matt?
And ease.
I'm jealous.
You should at least look into it and check it out. I'm telling you, it will, if you think you feel good at 600, you will feel so much better where I am at now, because that's where I was at. I was at the 600 level and I thought I felt good. And there were still times where I would still just not off. And now my energy level is more, I can go throughout my day and I don't have to worry about hitting that low spot.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know when I get a good night's sleep and I get my workout in, I feel energetic throughout the day.
Yep.
But then life, so New Year's came along and I said, I am not staying up for New Year's because it messes me up. When I go to bed after 11, I'm like, just dragging. And, doesn't matter if I take my magnesium or not.
That's some discipline.
Yeah. So I try to go to bed by 9:30 or 10, because I'm usually, a lot of times I have to be at the gym early. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when I go to take my magnesium and go to bed, I wake up, I'm like, ping, I'm up. I mean, I'm ready to go, right? But kids wanted me to stay up for New Year's. And I'm like, oh, gosh. I'm like, all right. Sure enough, I stayed up. Didn't go to bed till 1 or 1:30.
Wednesday, things you do for love.
All day, because this is another reason it triggers my migraines. All day I struggled with a migraine. All day. Okay? So I had to take my Sumatriptan, you know, to knock it out. And was dragging on Thursday. Kind of dragging on Friday, and today is the first time I'm like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit better. So going to bed late for me is not good.
It just knocks you out of your rhythm.
And not, I mean, for the week. Mm-hmm. It's not just the day. I mean, when I was young, obviously, not a big deal. But, you know, at my age, getting to bed early is important, especially for what me and Parker do. Parker doesn't struggle as much with it as I do, but very important for me to get to bed. And so I'm wondering in those moments, like if my testosterone's higher, if that would help with my energy levels when I have those nights and I'm having to stay up later.
Well, you know, your testosterone obviously peaks in the morning, right?
Right.
But with that, I mean, with the therapy, it allows you to peak longer, I would say. It just maintains it at a higher level.
I'd have more fudge room.
You
would. Think.
I think you, I mean, you should look into it at least and see what, and you don't have to do the same amount that I'm doing. I mean, I think what I'm doing is probably a very standard dose, yes. I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. You can do more or less than that based on after when you come in after your first assessment, after a few months of doing it to see where you're at.
Right.
Dr. Alexander or Christine, Dr. Alexander will talk to Christine about it, and they will prescribe something higher or lower depending on what your preference is, how you're feeling. They get feedback. They want you to know, hey, are you, you know, is this work for you? Do you think you need to increase it? Do you want to decrease it? Right where I like where I'm at, and I'm not. You said four digits, but it's higher than 1,000. So
let's get to the nitty gritty here. So a lot of people are going to be interested after hearing this, and they're like, man, I might need to do this. So is this something that it's a cash pay? Does insurance get involved? I mean, what are people looking at if they want to get? If they want to include this as into their budget, what would they need to be thinking about?
Matt's asking for a friend.
Yes. It's obviously it's going to be something I'm thinking about, but it's going to be what a lot of people
just
are thinking about.
Just asking for a friend.
Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, again, your insurance and your primary care provider are addressing sick care.
Yeah.
Right? So to be proactive and take care of your health, it is out of pocket.
Right.
Just the time that is invested in this. Your health is your wealth.
Yeah.
So you are worth the investment. Right?
Well, we talk about that all the time with our, you know, people need to invest in coming into the gym.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we have an old story from the past gym that our previous trainer that we worked with had, and, you know, where. So she's there because, you know, she has got serious health condition going on, severely overweight. She pulls up in her, you know, $80,000 car with her $1,000 purse. And then she looks at the price of the gym and personal training. And so this is too expensive. And you know, he was frank. He said, can I be honest with you? I said, I think you need to reevaluate your priorities. Right.
100%.
You know, and yeah. Where, and that's a classic story of way a lot of people look at fitness. And so what you're saying right now is it's a similar scenario that people need to change the way they think about things. So instead of driving the Lexus, maybe drive the Honda and invest in BHRT.
That's an interesting story that you do say, because that has been my experience too, especially the few times that people will actually say to me, that this is too expensive, and I immediately look, and there I'm like, an entire year with me is less than your handbag.
Yeah.
Like, really? Okay.
Well, yeah.
It's really not. I will attest. It's really not all that much, and for what you get, again, health is your wealth. If you can't invest in yourself, you shouldn't be investing in anything else. You should be investing in yourself first and foremost, especially. Yes. If you know, the older we get, we don't live just for ourselves. We live for our family and for our kids and for a lot of other people. And if you want to be, I guess, a positive for people and not a detriment, then and be able to get up and down those stairs like Matt was talking about, then invest in yourself and continue to do that. And, you know, Dr. Alexander said she has patients that are in their 80s and 90s that are still seeing her. That, I mean, and they're living that Japanese lifestyle. You know, they're going. So, to me, I yes, invest in yourself for sure.
Yeah.
As a doctor, I want to ask you your opinion on the traditional medical insurance industry. And I'm sure I'm going to open a can of worms here, but I want to hear a little bit of your thoughts on it, because we've had a lot of discussions about it. We've covered it quite a bit on this podcast, how frustrating it is and how anti-health it is.
Absolutely. Again, it's just all support, and it dictates your care if you allow it to. It will absolutely dictate. Well, and I do hear, well, you don't take insurance. So therefore, yes, it is set up as a sick care model. And insurance specifically, they're going to deny and refuse as much as they can to increase their top dollar. It is. It's all a money game. So hopefully Kennedy will help us.
Yes, yes.
I think he is coming in to do a complete 180 on well, a bunch of stuff.
So the deny has been going, and then finally you complain enough, you they'll cover it, or people will just get tired of it and just take care of it. That's been going on for 60 years. My dad was complaining about it when I was in high school. It's like, oh, they're denied it again, you know, and then he'd resubmit it and they'd finally cover it. I mean, that's been going on forever.
It's just
and nothing preventative,
worse.
Nothing to make you actually healthier, which you think about it, if they cover some of this preventative stuff, then they would have to pay less catastrophic stuff down the road and less, you know, long-term illness stuff, but they don't want to do that, even though it would probably actually save them money and be a healthier population.
Well, again, it's all about you take this drug and then you take this drug because it causes this symptom of this drug and on and on and on. And it's they make money off of sickness.
Yeah, they don't want you healthy.
Well,
yeah.
you can and should do your cancer screenings. So that's about as proactive that you can get through that. But take, for example, diabetes. So when I first got in, you know, started out through residency and then after, you could easily see diabetes coming 10 years out. You could identify a person and say, if they don't change things, they will be diabetic in 10 years. Certainly 5 years, but you could see it 10 years out, right? But we don't get paid if they don't have a diagnosis. So you can't spend the time to educate them to prevent this. So then they did come up with Syndrome X, and then it became metabolic syndrome, but yet they still have to have certain criteria to meet before you can give them that diagnosis that then you can get paid to see them to start educating them. And by then, right, you're so far behind on, and then what are you educating them? Well, now you're going to need these five drugs and blah, blah, blah.
So, when your hands are tied on actually helping them the way that they need help.
Absolutely.
That's frustrating.
And it's all reversible. I would have never thought as an internist that autoimmune disease was reversible. It need not exist. Autoimmune disease literally means two things. You have a gut imbalance, so dysbiosis in the gut, a gut imbalance. And then you also have an imbalance in your hormones called methylation deficits. So methylation is extremely important. And that's, especially if you are on bioidentical hormones, you would want to know your methylation status, which is you can find out your genetics to it. It is a genetic situation and it's very prevalent. And it, of course, expresses in America, unlike anywhere else, right? And you can get a simple blood test, homocysteine is what it's called, to make sure that you're methylating well. It's extremely important.
I think I'm coming to learn the more I research that almost everything, aside from maybe like cutting a limb off or something, almost everything is reversible.
Everything is.
And they teach us it's not. You know, they teach us that all these illnesses are chronic and you get them and you're stuck with them forever and you have to medicate forever. Most of the time, there's a way to reverse them, even cancers.
Even cancer.
Yeah.
Every cancer has been naturally reversed right? It has been done for sure.
Well, I always hear on the cancer stuff, you just need to make sure you maintain more of an alkaline, you know, there. From what I'm learning more and more, the higher the cholesterol level, you can raise your cholesterol level and make your body more alkaline and cancers just can't grow. Just can't maintain anyway. If they do grow, I'm right about something. Am I not right about that? So that's, and a lot of people are told, well, you're not supposed to have high cholesterol or higher cholesterol. They want your cholesterol lower. Well, that's where that breeds and starts going. So anyway,
Well, speaking of cholesterol, that is the father of all of your repair sex hormones.
Yeah.
Cholesterol is the father of testosterone, right? Who's your daddy?
Yeah. Just on cholesterol, that's something me and Parker have talked a lot about. And, you know, I had my cholesterol tested and then it was 276. And so sure enough, the nurse calls me and she's like, oh, we need to get you on statin right away. I'm like, no, that won't be happening. And she was shocked by that. And I was like, listen, I'm taking care of myself. I'm not doing statin. And, you know, I said, I did some research and found out that the real important one is the LDL particle size.
Absolutely.
Right. So is it oxidized particles or is it large particles? So if you have large, if you have oxidized particles, then that's something to be concerned about. But just because your cholesterol is 275, that's nothing to be concerned about. And, you know, heck, you know, your brain's made of cholesterol. So, you know, it's just the cholesterol, that's something me and Parker have got on our pedestals a few times about, because it's everyone putting people on statin, which is so bad for you. So I'm off that pedestal.
Speaking to the choir.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cholesterol particles, it's size does matter.
Yeah.
It is not the number. If you have 300 LDL particles, but they're all big helium balloons because they were able to stay in the liver long enough to fully mature, they're big, they're buoyant, they don't fall out of the blood flow, they're too big to even cause cardiovascular plaquing, right? Who cares what your number is?
Yeah.
But if you got the small golf balls, and certainly then those are more easily sugar-coated and whatnot, right? But the size of the particle is what matters.
So what causes the particles to oxidize?
It all goes back to your gut health.
Interesting. So yep. If you have bad gut health,
yes,
you're going to have bad LDL.
Yes.
Wow.
What your liver does when your liver is strained, because you've got leaky gut, you've got all this stuff leaking in, and the liver has to manage it all. It tries to protect you by increasing your production of cholesterol, because that is your regenerating and making new cells. You have to have the cholesterol to make new cell walls. You have to have it for your regeneration. So it's trying to support you to increase your number. But of course, it has to shuttle it out quicker, so before it can become fully big, buoyant, right? So it's going to shuttle it out. And then, of course, if there are toxins, which is the whole situation with the leaky gut, leaking these toxins in, that's going to cause free radical oxidation, where you don't have enough of your antioxidants to offset that situation at the time.
So I'm going to say, here's the things. You said something right at the beginning of the podcast.
Binding and draining.
not that one. But you were saying that man has always been hunter-gatherers. That's our nature, right? We don't do that anymore. And because we don't do that, because we were hunter-gatherers, that also means we ate pretty much naturally. We were fasters, right? Because mm-hmm. you had
Absolutely.
To fast to between your hunts,
yep.
right? So intermittent fasting was just a natural part of life,
yep.
right? And because we have shifted away from that and we live sedentary lives, right? Our food is delivered to us in grocery stores, right? And to get it there and to be a place for us to go and get it, and all these preservatives have to be put into it or processed in a way that they can actually sit on a shelf for long enough for the transportation to get it there. So our entire way that we live right now is turned upside down, hence the creation of your job, right? What makes what you do very important. So if, like, tomorrow, which is not going to happen, but let's say tomorrow we all became hunter-gatherers again, well, then the body would naturally go back to what it was supposed to be in the first place.
Absolutely.
Right?
We would eventually.
Eventually. Over time. And then suddenly your job would probably become irrelevant. But as long as we are in this scenario, and we will stay in this scenario, your job is extremely important.
Yeah, and I'm okay with my job becoming obsolete when we're all in health.
Yeah, but we are so far past that. You know, it's
yep.
like you got 20 years. So give me so I've had two clients. One was in his 40s and he had a testosterone level of 50. Okay? And then I heard
they draw the blood in the morning, and it can be 200 points higher in the morning at your peak.
Yeah.
Than even in the afternoon time.
Now,
so
stress can also
he's peaking at 50.
Yeah, he's peaking at 50.
That's crazy.
Okay, and then I had a more recent friend of mine who works out, but is very stressed, and he has testosterone done, and it was 5. Five.
That might be a record. I don't think I've ever seen.
And I was just like,
I've seen a few 50s.
You have to show me this.
He's got to be walking around like a zombie. I mean, seriously, how are you functioning?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So now, again, I didn't see it, but that's what he told me. But, you know, and now you're telling me we have 20-year-olds that have what kind of testosterone level are we talking about with these 20-year-olds that are coming in?
If they're doing all their working out and they're eating well as much, I mean, on the high side, 400. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
And when you're in your 20s, that should already be four digits.
Naturally.
Easily in the thousands.
Naturally.
Easily in the thousands.
Yeah.
What's too high?
And I definitely see numerous in the 200 ranges.
Wow.
In the 20s. Yeah.
So what's too high?
It's only too high if it's too high for that individual person.
Okay.
If it's stimulating the production of blood cells. You can go bloodlet, right? But if you're not going to manage that, then we would need to reduce. So it's only too high if it's too high for that individual. There's no specific too high. Now, of course, you know, there's no real reason, though. You're not going to benefit. Let's say you're up at a 1,200. You're really not going to have the benefit of between the 1,200 to 2,000. You're not going to notice a difference in your day-to-day life. So there's no real reason to push. For the most part. Now, some people, of course, the more you work out, you might burn through your testosterone more. Mm-hmm, so it's for that individual and where your goals are and things like this. But most people, at minimum, over 1,000 is ideal. 1,200 is kind of perfect. But well, too much after that, you're not going to notice a huge difference.
I mean, I've got about 100 more questions on here, but...
You just have to have her back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is be show number one. Do you have... what's your opinion on peptides?
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, again, to each one, to is it for that right person? And there's going to be pros. And yeah, so, I mean, of course, the Ozempics of the world is a peptide. So you do have to, right?
Right.
To each one, to each specific, what are we aiming to achieve here? What I would say first for men that want to try to raise their own testosterone, there are luteinizing hormone analogs. So they mimic your LH hormone in you to stimulate your testes to produce. So that's things you've heard of at HCG.
Mm-hmm.
I would never want a female to utilize HCG or the other one is Clomid. So this is for male specific. The female should not be, you know, we ovulate once a month. It shouldn't be a continual hit because you could push somebody into autoimmune situation. So only for the males, you could re-stimulate the testes with HCG or Clomid. And sometimes that's enough. And especially as long as they have great adrenal health, DHEA, back supporting their testosterone, right? So as long as adrenal health is in as best place it can be. And of course, there's natural things to help support meditation and as simple as that. That's sometimes enough to get somebody up enough that then they can maintain that physiologic level to their peak so that they don't have to do replacement until they're
ready
to replace.
I've heard of a product called Somorlin.
Yes.
And I have a couple of trainers that are taking that right now.
So HCG and Clomid are the analogs to raise testosterone. Mm-hmm. Somorlin is the peptide to support growth hormone.
Yes.
It naturally raises your own growth hormone. And growth hormone and testosterone are very close in nature. If one's low, generally the other one's low. If you can build one, the other one also will improve.
Okay.
So I want to, before we close, kind of speaking directly to our listeners. If you had people who, because like our listeners, and we'll talk about how they can get in contact with you in a minute, but if they're just listening to this podcast and they're looking for something that they can do, the first step they need to take to work on improving their health, what's kind of an action item or a couple different action items that they can do themselves to get started, to kind of get going on this path? What would you recommend to them? And maybe like a male and then a female.
That's a great question. So set themselves up for success. Create one goal and make it to where it's achievable for them. So getting back into the gym, maybe it's twice a week, something that they can commit to and build success with it, right? And then once they've achieved that to a degree that they know they can stay committed, then add the next layer, right? I would have to say intermittent fasting as a all-around lifestyle shift that people can make that will benefit them the most. Now, of course, if there's diabetes and some of these things, you have to, with anything, you want to start and build upon it, right? So maybe you start out, if you're already just naturally, because you snack before bed or something, maybe if you're only getting 8 hours of fasting in, increase it to 10. Increase it to, and listen to your body. Your body will tell you, like, I have to eat right now. Then you go eat right now, right? The first time I started intermittent fasting, I was just determined no matter what, I was going to do it. Well, 3 days in, I woke up at, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning, and there was no going back to sleep. And I was eating the kitchen down. So, right, gracefully go into it and listen to your body.
You're speaking to the choir on the intermittent fasting right here. I mean, they preach about that.
I also want to know your thoughts on long-term fasting, multi-day fasting.
Unsupported, absolutely not. Unfortunately, so many people have such a toxin buildup that when you start forcing the fat burn, I have seen hepatitis level liver enzymes on people on a 3-day healthy, what I thought was very, very, very healthy. Like I had a friend, he was a massage therapist, but everything that you would imagine, he's eating well, he's working out, right? He's doing all the things. Looks great. And I was just curious. I was like, would you mind on the next time you do? And it was only the second time he did a 3-day water fast, right? I captured his blood work and he was in hepatic failure liver, like hepatitis liver enzymes. So if you support it, then absolutely. Unsupported, meaning like, I love Prolon. It creates autophagy. It's a 5-day fasting mimicking diet, right? But you could do something like that for yourself, but heavily key on the making sure you're alkalinizing. So your warm sea salt water while you're doing this, right? Like some of these are mandatory to support yourself through a longer fast.
Interesting.
I have another question. I gotta ask. Okay, so I do meal plans for my clients.
Fantastic.
And you know, I have clients that are just looking to cut, you know, and so, you know, I write their meal plans. And I have one client that he kind of lived an intermittent fasting type of lifestyle. He doesn't eat until noon. You know, and he has noon and he has dinner and that's it. Okay. And he's eating at like 6 o'clock and then he doesn't eat until noon the next day. And he's a big boy, you know, he weighed 295. He's trying to get down to like 250, 245, you know, big guy. And so he was naturally intermittent fasting. And I remember when I was putting his meal plan together, I was talking to Parker about his protein. Right, because he wants to stay strong, but he hadn't been in the gym that long, and he was just because of his youth, he was going to get naturally strong, even though he was probably going to lose some muscle. But on the flip side of that, you have people that want to put on muscle, right? Which usually means you're going to put on some fat. So, you know, to maintain muscle, our philosophy has been with research is that you need to maintain it at 0.8 grams. Protein per pound of body weight. Okay. If you want to actually add muscle, you know, and again, this age plays into this, you need to be looking at least 1-to-1, close to 1-to-1, or you can, and if you're one pound, really pack it on 1.2. So you're 1-to-1. So if you weigh 180 pounds, you're looking at 180 grams of protein, right? Well, that's a lot of protein. And body only can synthesize anywhere between 35 to 55, give or take, depending on their age, at a particular meal. So you're looking at a lot of meals, because to put that much protein down, a lot of people can't eat that much protein in two meals. So, you know, and so my thought process as we've been sitting here thinking about it is like, you know, you have your guys that want to, you know, add a lot of muscle, which is really, it's not, that's not the hunter-gatherer way, right? That's why it's kind of doesn't really fit into that model. But the only way to really pack on that kind of muscle is you're going to have to eat more than two meals. You're going to have, in fact, in some cases, you're going to probably be eating probably every 2 to 3 hours during your waking hours. And it works because I've done it. It 100% works. But it you're so if someone's doing that, you want to intermittent fast for like a period of time to like what reset the system. Is that something that I mean? I guess I'm asking your thoughts on that whole.
Okay, so first for me, weight loss is detoxification. If the liver is overwhelmed, the first thing it does to protect itself is shut down fat burning. Because it's like, I'm already dealing with enough toxins coming in. I cannot handle what is where the toxins are stored in the fat cells, right? Mm-hmm. So it'll shut down fat burning. So one of my very favorite all-time products is something called OptiCleanse. And it is a protein meal replacement that has every single phase one, phase two detoxification. It's got gut healing nutrients in it, as well as drainers like that we talk about that drain the toxins out of the body, support toxins detoxing. But then also too, like, so you're bulking, and my son and I go round and round because he will dirty bulk, dirty bulk. And I'm like,
yeah, then we don't believe in dirty bulk.
Not in my house. You are, buddy. But then of course I find this stuff in the, he's 17. What am I to do?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He also, he does a little bit of both, but, have him add the collagen in their coffee in the morning. That's a great protein source, right? Right. Do you have them right after their workouts? Get a protein, a protein drink,
right?
Consumed protein shake, yeah. And then I think too, if they want to really increase that amount of protein at meals, they really want to look into digestive enzymes to help break it down and get it into the body.
So they're more sensitive to it. Synthesize it
it's
better.
Just, it's really hard to break down protein.
Yes.
And if you're trying to really put on, especially if it's a dense fiber, what you don't want is anything you put in the body that doesn't get absorbed, with the exception of the vegetable fibers, right? Well, if it's fat, it sits and turns rancid.
Mm-hmm.
And then the protein will sit and turn rancid as well, ferment, and it'll putrefy. And an unhealthy steak, rotten steak, you put it on a healthy steak, you're going to have two rotten, right? So if you've got putrefied protein sitting in your intestines, not good for gut health. So if they're trying to really improve the amount of protein in the body, I would recommend that they do digestive enzymes to support. Actually, I think everybody should have some digestive enzyme support.
That's excellent. I think of myself, I was trying to get heavier for the last 2 year and a half, and I couldn't gain a pound. I was eating clean as I can, but trying to eat as much as I can. I was up to 3,000 calories, can't gain a pound. And in fact, when I just dropped down, when I started the job here, I was around probably 25 to 2,600 trying to, and I started losing weight. So then I started doing meal prep here, and now I'm starting to go back up, but I'm up to like 3,500 calories a day. And I'm, you know, I've added about 5 pounds. So it's a very clean way, you know, and that's me and Parker talk about. It's like we try to avoid the dirty bulk as much
Absolutely.
As possible, because it's, you know, now you're ingesting processed food, you know. But so it's interesting from your standpoint to get this information, because, you know, it makes me think about, you know, getting my gut even more healthy.
And I think the intermittent fasting is a lifestyle, way of life for life, yet you're going to have moments in your life that you want to achieve more muscle. So you're not going to be intermittent fasting that time. If you're needing to put in this protein, that's just that period that you're in.
Right.
And then you can achieve that and then go into a maintenance where you go back to your fasting.
And I'm almost thinking, like, I've been bulking for quite some time, struggling. And I'm almost thinking, you know, that there probably needs to be a reset from time to time. Because if you Absolutely. Like, let's say you've been bulking for a year, and suddenly it's like, okay, I think the body needs a reset. It's time to do some intermittent fasting. For how much time do you think that should be?
How long to repair the gut health,
since you've been eating, and just to clean yourself out, and then like a reset before you go back and start competing again?
At 6 weeks would be a nice... Right? I mean, 6 weeks would be nice. I mean, even 2 weeks would do huge benefit. But
so about 6 weeks of...
2 to 6 weeks of getting back on the... And remember to feast with those fibrous veggies to really help cleanse out the intestines too.
Okay.
Interesting stuff. Do you guys have any more questions? I mean...
Well, I have about...
He's got a bunch.
I got a bunch, but there'd have to be another show.
That was fascinating. Yeah, I definitely want to have you on again, Doctor.
Thank you.
At some point, we need to, because
I would love to.
Not only is this just like fire hose of information for me, I'm sure it is for you guys too,
but I'm sure
anybody who listens to this, same thing, they're going to be wanting more. So if somebody that's listening is interested in getting into contact with you, how should they go about doing that?
So my practice is named New You Health Studio, and we're in Leawood. And newukc.com.
Okay. And they can book a appointment or something online if they
Can
visit the website, read about it.
I have a phone number that's specified for new patients.
Okay.
So that we can answer any of the questions that
they have. Repeat that website again.
So newukc.com.
Okay.
Do you want to now put that phone number out there?
Yeah.
I don't remember what it is. I know it's a 913 number.
I think I have her website. Is it on the website?
Yeah.
Let me see if I can get it up here. Let's see here. Here we go.
So I have it
913-229-0787. Okay.
All right.
Great. Well, Doctor, we want to thank you for coming on, and thank you for bringing your wealth of information to us. Brian, thank you for, thank you for gracing us with your presence again. And then,
no thank you needed for that.
And thanks for bringing Dr. Alexander to our podcast, because this is a great group. And what was this, Matt? The 47th episode?
47th episode.
47 in the books. We want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you guys for joining us. And me and Matt will be back with you guys next week for another episode.
All right, guys. Take care.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.